Gospel Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Happy New Year. Welcome back. It's been few weeks we've been taking off since the end of the year and taking time to move to Virginia, got a new house here, and so we are fully ensconced now in Virginia Beach. I am the director of script and screenwriting programs now at Regent University here in Virginia Beach, and so I'm creating graduate program or revamping graduate programs in screenwriting for them. So online programs as well as in person on campus. So if you want to learn how to be a screenwriter and you want to do it online on your own time, feel free to check out Regent University because we're creating a really great program. But that's what I've been doing, as well as moving. And so happy New Year. So lots of news, so much news that we're kind of doing something different this week. We're going to talk about news for the first probably half hour of the show. Usually I just do that for the first 15 minutes, but there's just too much happening, and I couldn't figure out how to squeeze it all in. And so that's what we're going to do. And then we have, we'll see how far we get. I wanted to talk about the problem of excellence in movies, because I've been seeing so many lately with the Oscar run-up, all the awards season going. And honestly, they're so bad that you just, after a while, you start to say, you know, what's the problem here? It's, and I, when I say bad, I don't mean morally bad, although some of them are that. But they're just bad as craft in terms of technique. So I'm just wondering here if I can move back. I'm noticing the light isn't great on me. Anyway, it's like bad production value. It got very dark in this room, which was light all day. But anyway, so we'll see. Sorry about this, that it's a little dark, but kind of romantic lighting. So, okay, well, so this is a show where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. And my background is I'm a member of the Writers Guild of America, which is a screenwriters union. And I've been a producer. I've been a development executive. And I worked 23 years in Hollywood, helping a lot of young people make a start in the business. And then I got into education, got my doctorate in creative writing. And now I teach young people and write, too. I have a movie coming out on April that I wrote or pushed. I co-wrote a movie on Fatima. And then there's also a short film that I wrote that's getting shot probably even as we speak right now. So I'm still a writer. I'm still engaged in it. And so I love to encourage other people. You know, I think that the thing of this show is to stop cursing the darkness and instead start saying, OK, what can we do? How can we make something better than what we're seeing out there? So this show, usually I feature people who are all doing it in different ways, who are writers or artists, poets or painters. We've had architects, anybody in the arts who's a believer. I try to bring them on, tell their story, by way of encouraging those of you who are out there to start making something beautiful for God. Let's do something beautiful for God, as Mother Teresa said, instead of just slapping our heads and rolling our eyes at all the ugliness that's around us. Well, let's try to put something good out there. So that's my thing, and that's what we do. So, all right, well, let's jump in here because there's so much. So this was the week of the Golden Globes, and most of you do not watch the Golden Globes. It's known in the industry as the kind of real big, you know, kind of start, the launch of awards season. The Golden Globes are always a kind of a bellwether of what the Oscars are going to do, and that's, of course, the biggies. But it's kind of ridiculous. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association, which gives the Golden Globes, is usually about 80 people, and they have their disproportionate number of power. They're known to give awards to nominations, just big stars, just because they want them to attend their party. But anyway, so we had the Golden Globes this week, and it was notable for two things. So we're going to talk about both of them because quite interesting cultural response. So You'd have to be the only person in Jerusalem not to know about Ricky Gervais and his speech to launch his opening monologue when he's a comedian. And he's known to be an irreverent guy. He's very vile, actually, I think, in a lot of his the things he talks about. He's certainly not a Christian. He's not a conservative by any stretch. However, he is kind of representative of this movement among comedians to throw off the strictures that are getting placed on comedy by the politically correct crowd, right? So people like Jerry Seinfeld have come out and said that this is terrible for free speech, and Adam Carolla notably was in a documentary with Dennis Prager called No Safe Spaces about this problem of free speech. So the only people who are having the courage to kind of speak out against being bridled are comedians, because they're seeing how it's ruining comedy. Well, Ricky Gervais was hired to be the host of the Golden Globes, and everybody knew he was going to do something, but he literally reamed the assembled elites. He told them, first of all, that they had no business making political speeches when they won their award. Please don't do that, because you're a bunch of hypocrites. You work for some of the worst corporate giants that do terrible things, like Disney and Apple and Google, all of whom, you know, make deals with the Soviets, with the Red China, to have sweatshops to produce their product, etc. And he said, and you're sitting there going to lecture America about, you know, your virtue. He's like, don't even bother. He said, and the truth is, you're so vile, all of you, that if ISIS started a streaming service, you would all be on your phone to your agent immediately to try to get a job. So this was pretty bad. And the audience was like, coing, you know. So all the celebrities, they were panning through the crowd, and they were, you know, shocked is not enough. They were angered by what he was saying there. And so the question is, so of course, obviously, it's gotten a tremendous amount of media play now. Everybody's talking about what was Ricky Gervais doing. And so he came out with a follow-up the day after because of the response. And he said, let me get this straight, you know, something to the effect of on me calling out corporate elites and huge multi-global corporations makes me a right winger. You know, which is a great point, right? So anyway, kind of just interesting watching that unfold and what it means. What it might mean is that the tide might be turning, that this politically correct nonsense that's been driving us all crazy for these last, you know, I'm going to say two decades, but especially this last decade. The 21st century has been notable for being absolutely ridiculous, kind of people being scared into trying to jump on whatever is the latest thing triggering others, you know, not to be triggering anybody, not to say anything that anybody's going to take offense at, unless, of course, you know, if you say anything conservative, you're automatically offensive, but you can attack anybody else. It's so disproportionate. It's so hypocritical, as Ricky Gervais pointed out. And so that he would use a forum like the Golden Globes, and people were saying, well, maybe they didn't know he was going to do that. No, I had a friend who posted on another website. She works for the Golden Globes. She was there in the producing team, and they had rehearsed his whole speech. So the Golden Globes committee knew he was going to say that, and they said, let him do it. So, yeah, make of that what you will. I'm going to make of it that the tide might be turning, that the center cannot hold on this ridiculous everything, you know, becoming taboo, everything being taboo, that we're all kind of going crazy with having our freedom of speech so selectively, policed for us. And I think it might be that people have had it, and it could be that. But it was extremely, it's hard not to gloat watching the faces of the Hollywood elite. You know, they're all there in their gorgeous gowns and everything, making, and they're about to be, you know, fawning over themselves for everything. And somebody stands up and calls them out on their hypocrisy. And then he actually, his last comment was, most of you don't even have enough, I don't even have as much education as Greta Thunberg. You know, that's that Swedish teenager with them. with who's on the spectrum, who's all about climate change. And, you know, she's, of course, so very dark character, I think. But anyway, at least she's, you know, she got like high school education. So here he is calling them out on the fact that most of them don't even have, you know, enough, really high school. And they're trying to, you know, preen and posture as being experts in geopolitics, you know. So anyway, it was something to see. But I do think, I think there's a sign of the time. I think that the worm is turning on the politically correct stuff. I think even people on the left have had it with it. And it's going to be very interesting to see what, you know, how it becomes an anti-trend. And I think we are going to see it become an anti-trend in very short order. You know, one of the things about a 24-hour media climate is everything moves so much faster. Things that would have taken 5 or 10 years, you know, maybe 50 years ago to kind of become a trend, now become a trend in hours. People can, you know, people will say something's trending on Twitter, you know, and it can be there and hot and then gone in 3 days. And then we forget and it goes off the radar. Well, how fast this thing of the bridling of speech and kind of making fun of it, making fun of these people, how fast that's going to become an anti-trend, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to watch. So that's just the first part of my commentary on the Golden Globes. If you didn't see it, Google Rick Gervais. Stay tuned. We got lots more. This is Barbara Nicolosi on the Church of the Masses Radio.
Welcome to our January 11th, 2020 Spiritual Warfare Conference. Every year without fail, this is our most popular, well-attended event. This year's Spiritual Warfare Conference will host Adam Bly, a Catholic demonologist, and an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists, along with Dr. Luis Sandoval, a psychiatrist who's part of the Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism team for the Diocese of Orange. These two gentlemen bring tons of experience and expertise in the area of spiritual warfare. This is going to be a high-information Catholic seminar. I'll be there as well, sharing some riveting stories on the diabolical and liberation found through Jesus Christ from my best-selling book, The Devil and the City of Angels. Mark your calendars, come and join us, and meet other radio hosts from Jesus 911. Contrary to popular belief, spiritual warfare is not demon-centered. It's Christ-centered. Come join us and learn how to armor up and fight the good fight of faith. Catholics, wake up. Don't hit the snooze button. Join us at St. Christopher Catholic Church, 629 South Glendora Avenue, West Covina, California, on January 11, 2020. See you then. Strength and honor in Jesus' name.
Sirach 11:24 says, "Do not say, I am self-sufficient. What harm can come to me now?" According to St. Catherine of Siena, presumption is like vermin burrowing at the root of the tree of our soul. If we do not uproot it with great care and humility, it will eventually destroy the soul. May God keep us from all presumption of mind and heart, and realize that we depend on Him for everything.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, Barbara Nicolosi. This is Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network, and this is the show where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. If you like the show, please do let us know. Send us a message on Facebook, on Church of the Masses, or feel free to write Virgin Most Powerful Radio and rave about it. Send them $1 million. Tell them how much you like the show. I'd love to pay my producer, Hannah, at some point for her hard work. So we're talking about the Golden Globes, and we mentioned the whole kerfuffle over Ricky Gervais calling out the left, and my feeling that it was kind of a sign of more to come, that the politically correct stuff is going to become an anti-trend very soon. We're going to see that in a very short time that the center cannot hold. So, but now the second part of the Golden Globes that we just have to talk about, that everybody is talking about, is Michelle Williams' speech when she won her Golden Globes for a show that no one saw except people in the industry. I forget the name of it. She won for Fosse Verdon. Nobody knows what that is, really, it seems to me. But anyway, so Michelle Williams is a very talented actress. Seems a little bit like a tragic figure. She was the consort of Heath Ledger, who was the actor who became very famous for being in Brokeback Mountain, but then he played the Joker, and the role kind of drove him crazy, and then he ended up dying of, I believe, a drug overdose. And so she had a baby with him, Michelle. They weren't married. And Michelle grew up in a Christian family in Montana. She went to a Christian high school in San Diego. Her father had run twice unsuccessfully for the United States Senate on the Republican ticket in Montana. And so you could argue the case that Michelle comes from our world. She comes from our side of things. But unfortunately, being in Hollywood all of these years, she is now she has become very much the victim of the meat market that is Hollywood. So basically, she said when she accepted her award, she was visibly pregnant from her new relationship, again, not married. But she said, "I am choosing to have my baby now." You know, that, well, thank God we live in a country where we can choose when we want to have babies and not. And she basically implied that she had had an abortion and that had made her career possible. It really kind of stunning and horrifying to say this. And then she, you know, encouraged women to vote for their interests so that we can preserve, choice. And so this was weird in a couple ways. So one was that Ricky Gervais had just chastened them all and said, don't come up here and use your award acceptance to advocate for your politics. Nobody wants to hear it. And so that Michelle Williams felt the need to do this was just, felt creepy in light of Ricky's, what he had said. But the creepiest thing was the assertion that in order to have a career, you have to kill your child, right? That behind, but as I see, I saw a meme on Facebook, behind every successful woman, there must be a dead baby. That somehow there was that implication in her speech. Kind of very horrifying, but she seemed like a pathetic figure to me, also kind of tinged with desperation, like she was saying something and trying to convince herself. And of course, all the glitterati were screamingly approving of her and standing ovation, and they continue to, all of the leftward media calling her brave and truthful. And, I've even seen Michelle Williams for president, but the fact is it was creepy and you can't sell a lie. But, I really felt bad for her. I've had people making fun of her on various conservative websites or people ridiculing her. I really think we need to pray for this young woman. Just terrible, terrible thing, obviously, that she's done, and she's trying to, even if she really thinks in full honesty that she did the right thing, that only makes her more pathetic, I think, from our standpoint. So this is a great example of how we have to pray for people who become famous, are entertainers, these artists. They get sucked into a world that tells them they have to violate themselves in every possible way and that it's legitimate, that that's part of what they do, right? And so, you know, we've got to have facial surgery and nip tucks and nose cut off and, yes, abort your child, quit school, you know, leave your family, whatever that you know, is necessary. And so we have to have a ministry to these artists. You know, I was thinking watching her that, once again, one of the biggest scandals for me in the church in Los Angeles always was that there was no official outreach to the entertainment industry. Can you imagine the most influential people group on the planet, and yet the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, which should serve them, ignores them? It does this for a few reasons that go back to Cardinal Mahoney. But, you know, the fact is you have a people group here that have no pastors that are talking to them specifically in what they do. And so it was very sad. And now, of course, you have the, everyone back and forth, either lionizing Michelle Williams or berating her and ridiculing her. And it's just so ugly. In the end, this is a woman who said to the world that she had to kill her child so that she could have the career she wanted. And very, very distressing, sad thing that we are in. And I felt very bad for her, and I continue to feel bad for my industry, ashamed of it, really. So, okay, so keep her in your prayers. What else? You know, more of the same. This is kind of a following on a story that's been out there, too. So, there's an actress, Jamila Jamil, and she has a podcast, apparently, that is very popular. She was on The Good Place and Misery Index, and she had scheduled Candace Owens, who is a Black conservative woman, very brilliant, beautiful. She was supposed to be on her podcast, but Candace Owens made the statement in public. She tweeted, rather, "Only women can give birth." And so Jamila Jamil canceled Candace Owens, saying that she made her transgender staff members feel unsafe. So this is the kind of thing, though, that I think Ricky Gervais was reacting against, right? The statement, "Only women can give birth," is suddenly hate speech. It's unsafe speech. This idea of that we should be untethered from biological realities, and that you know, we have this enforced on us, it's absolutely insane. But it makes sense that we've gotten as far away from God, so far away from God, and so consequently far away from the truth, such that we now tell ourselves this, that everyone has to believe the lies that we want to tell. Quite awful. But this, so Candace Owens is making a big thing of this, and she should. We need to have this kind of thing rebelled against. And we saw it in a similar event in the United Kingdom. A liberal pundit wrote something similar, that there are only two sexes, male and female, and she got, you know, terribly, she got fired from her job. And so that is also a cause celeb right now. So this question of how far can this go, I'm hoping we're seeing the end of it. Huh? Anyway. All right. I also wanted to give you a heads up about a movie called A Hidden Life, which is about Franz Jagerstatter. It was made by Terrence Malick, I have a love-hate relationship with Terrence Malick as a director. I loved his film, Badlands. It's on my top 10 list of movies ever made. And I think it's just a beautiful, beautiful piece. Having said that, he needs an editor. He's been making long, long, very lyrical, half weird, half profound movies. And so the most notable of them was Tree of Life, but he's had two since Tree of Life that were almost unwatchable, I think. But Tree of Life, to me, just went, it was like 45 minutes too long. There's some beautiful stuff there, but just too much of it, and then 45 minutes too long. Anyway, so now he's done a three-hour tribute to Franz Jagerstatter, who was a conscientious objector during World War II. He refused to fight for the Nazis, and he ends up being martyred over it. And the movie is getting tremendous already buzz. It's rated PG-13. They gave it a really quick kind of limited release, I believe, just so that it would qualify for awards. But it's going to be out everywhere in the next month or so. And I do want to recommend it. I think that it's a the basic theme of it, as I understand, is courage when the whole world is going the other way, for the Christian to say, I cannot go along with the crowd, even if it costs me everything, my family, my work, my life, my reputation, everything. I have to do what's right. And so that seems to me to be a message we could stand to hear these days, that we have become very timorous Christians and very comfortable Christians. And so to watch the example of someone in not too long ago who had to give his life to say, no, I'm not going along with the Nazis. I'm not going to do it. And so Malick, people are saying it's just a very lyrical, prayerful, beautifully paced piece, and long, but that it's very, very thoughtful. So I haven't seen it yet. I certainly will review it when I do, but I do want to give you a heads up, because chances are the movie will come and go really fast in your area. It'll probably be in the theaters one weekend, if that. And so you want to have a heads up for it. And it's kind of a project I think we do want to support. And so it's called A Hidden Life, PG-13 from Fox Searchlight Pictures, and should be playing around you even now. And last little piece I want to talk about quickly is that CNN has caved to the Covington Catholic Boys. So very interesting. So the Covington Catholic boy, Sandman, Nick Sandman, who was kind of outed and called a racist, and they did horrible things to him, and that crazy Indian guy was screaming in his face with his drum. Anyway, so he has been suing, I think, the Washington Post, NBC, and CNN for $800 million. Well, today the news broke that CNN has settled for an undisclosed amount. So rock on, Nick Sandman. Good for you. See, sometimes you do have to fight back because this cannot continue, some of the stuff that's going on. All right, so stay tuned. We've got lots more. This is Barbara Nicolosi on Church of the Masses Radio.
This is Matthew Arnold inviting you to listen to Happy Hour on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Every week, I offer reflections on the Sunday readings of the extraordinary form of the Mass and take a traditional look at the many challenges facing Catholics today. Drawing on scripture and medieval sources like the Imitation of Christ, I'll help you on your personal quest for spiritual perfection so that you can find true happiness in holiness. Check out Happy Hour live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on our Virgin Most Powerful Radio YouTube channel or our VMPR smartphone app. It's easy to download the app to your phone from the App Store or when you visit our website, vmpr.org. That's Happy Hour live every Friday at noon or anytime on demand. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And here's an easy way to support us, by going to smile.amazon.com and type in Catholic Resource Center or Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And when you log in your Amazon account and you purchase products, a portion of it will go right back in supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it doesn't cost you a dime. I want to thank you ahead of time, because that supports us year-round. May God bless you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello again. Welcome back. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. I'm a screenwriter, a producer, an academic. I run the script and screenwriting programs, the graduate programs at Regent University. And I'm very happy to be a host on Virgin Most Powerful Radio, doing my little show here where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. And I was talking about the Golden Globes the first half of the show, and I did forget there was one funny thing that happened. Apparently, the red carpet at the Golden Globes, a sewage pipe burst. It's as reported in the New York Post. And it flooded the Golden Globes red carpet. So there is a God, right? Good. So, okay. Well, so I wanted to respond to a question that I had from somebody that I thought, because, you know, always talking here on the show, encouraging people to make beautiful things, to get going as writers and artists insofar as you can. And so I had somebody write me and say, well, how do you know what, you know, what you're supposed to write about? And it's a wonderful question, really great, great question. And it reminded me of an exercise that my friend Karen Hall, who we had on once not long ago, we're going to have her on again coming up, but she's a writer and she went to the pretty prestigious program at William & Mary in playwriting under Dr. Lewis Catron. And he wrote a book on playwriting. He wrote two books on playwriting and began both books by calling for playwrights to create a personal credo, that you need to write a credo of what do I believe. And the reason is that being an artist, being a professional writer, is a very difficult thing to do. And it's at a certain point, it becomes not worth it for the money. Right? If money is the only thing you're after, it's so much easier to get a job at, you know, Walmart. It's much, much more stable. You can have benefits. You don't have crazy hours. But the instability and the just the insanity of the entertainment industry, for example. But I think being a writer, being isolated, kind of doing all of your own homework, then having to submit your work to idiots or whatever, you know, it's very tough. And money isn't going to be enough for you. But if you say, I am called to this, I have something that I am meant to say that no one else can say in exactly the way I can, and that then gives you a motivational energy. It's a vocation now, not a profession. Because you say, wow, I have something to give the world. I've been called to give the world this. So the credo is basically, you know, there's a whole many different formulas for how to do a professional credo. But I recommend everybody do it, whether you're a writer or not, whatever kind of art you are doing. You want to kind of figure out, what is it that I have to say to the world? Why should anyone look at my paintings, or why should anyone look at my photography or my whatever, you know? So what am I expressing underlying? What is the subtext message of my work as an artist? And so basically the credo that as I learned it was, you write a series of statements beginning with the phrase, this I know to be true, about, you know, whatever. It could be, this I know to be true about family life, this I know to be true about faith and God, this I know to be true about myself or about friendship, whatever. You make 10 of these statements, and you stand back and say, wow, this I know to be true. And someone said to me, well, why only 10? And I think, because honestly, most of our lives haven't given us much more than that, really, really profoundly true. So what you want to do is not put something on your credo list as that somebody's told you, right? You want it something that life has given you through your own experience, your own brooding and reflection, your own hard knocks. And you've kind of stumbled away and looked up into the light and said, this I know to be true, right? That becomes the nexus for your creative outpouring, that your work is going to flow from that thing you know to be true. And it's going to give you an energy to want to share that with the world. And so the idea of identifying what your themes are such that you say, wow, it is good that I get better at this. And see, that's the other thing. Getting better as an artist requires, if you've been listening to the show over these last few months, I mean, everybody says that. It's so much work. It's so much practice. It's so much kind of smacking your head down, trying to come up with ideas. And it's very labor intensive to be an artist and to make a living at it. So you have to say, okay, stay at it. I'm staying at it because it's bigger than I am, that God has called me to this. In some sense, you know, that parable where God gives the 5 talents and the 3 talents and the 1 talent. And it says you're going to be held accountable for this. And so it's the same thing with this credo stuff, that whatever it is that you know to be true hasn't been given just to you. It's been given to you, yes, probably to save your soul, but then it's been given to you to share so that somebody else can benefit from what you know to be true, what you have come to. So I think that art that begins with a credo will be more honest. It will certainly be more profound. Like so many movies that I watch, they're just not about anything. In fact, we're going to review the movie Knives Out in the last segment of the show. And I really think it's a caper film, but in the end, it just wasn't about anything. It wasn't about anything. And so completely unsatisfying, the kind of thing you're going to forget, doesn't really give you much in exchange for your time and your money. So working off a credo, coming out of, well, what do I have to share? This could really begin to transform art from Christians if we could cultivate that as part of the process. It's, you don't just sit down and start painting. You first ask yourself, what do I have to share? What do I have to say to the world? And then now you help your work be imbued with more meaning. In a time where so much is meaningless, we're surrounded by banality and ugliness and stupidity. And I don't think I'm being too harsh in saying that. So for Christians, we should contribute something else. The stuff we put out there should have a different color to it, a different aura. It should be worth people's while minimally as a kind of act of charity, right? So it's like, we are going to give people something that's not only, okay, yeah, it was worth their money, whatever, that it was fun, it was entertaining, but it was something. It's going to be something that helps them in their lifelong journey. It's going to make their journey easy. So I thought this was a great question that somebody asked me. How do I know what I'm supposed to write about? And, another line that is helpful here, my mother used to say to me all the time, there are many good things to do with your life, but not all of them are yours to do. And again, how do you know that? What's yours to do? Well, I think it goes back to the credo. You know, I'm a professional writer. People come approach me to write their projects on a regular basis. I had one just about a month ago that I passed on. Wasn't that it wasn't an interesting story. I think it had some potential. It just wasn't my story. And I didn't think I could do justice to what the producers wanted for the project. It just wasn't my story to tell. So I gave them a recommendation of a couple other writers who I thought could do a better job of it than I would. So there you go. Now, there are many good things to do in the world. You know, there's many beautiful gifts, but they may not be yours. And I have to struggle with this with my students. You know, they're all trying to be filmmakers. They're trying to be screenwriters, but it becomes obvious to me pretty early on if they have the talent to pursue it professionally or not. And so if they don't, if it becomes obvious that they're not really, you know, they're not placing in the top 10% of writers, then you want to help them find, well, what is it you are supposed to do professionally? Because probably you're not going to, you're going to have a, such a steep mountain to climb as a writer because you don't have the requisite gifts of grace and nature. So there must be something else you're meant to do. And this is always hard to help someone see this because people can fall in love with something. You like it, you're going to do this as your own therapy, but you're not going to do it professionally is what I say to people very often. So you have to find what you are meant to do. How are you meant to be an artist? How are you meant to bring the beautiful into this world? And I remember that someone said to me once, humble tasks are still necessary ones. We were talking about the sower of the seed, the parable of the sower, and I mentioned that it's very humble to have to sow. You know, everybody else wants to harvest, and, you know, it's kind of glorious to be able to harvest. And my friend said back to me, yes, it's a more humble task to sow the seed, but it's still a necessary one. And so I would throw that out there, that we need to find what we are fitted out to do, and that doesn't necessarily mean the most glamorous thing or the thing that our parents are going to, you know, brag about to their friends. You have to go with your talents. And so in closing, the last thought I would have about it is, you know, Plato talks about this in The Republic. How do you know what you're supposed to do with your life? And I always go with my students to talk about this. How do you know? Well, Plato says you should do the thing that you do better than other people, and most other people. You do whatever you do better than other people, and that you can learn faster than other people, and that you innovate more naturally than other people. Huh? So that becomes the guide for what the gifts of nature are that God has put in you that the world needs. It's like, what do you do easier and faster than other people? And again, it may or may not be the highest paying job. It may or may not be the most glamorous thing, but it's going to be necessary. And if you do it with excellence and power and you can innovate more naturally, that is the first sign that it's a good place for you to be. So again, I just want to encourage everyone, find the thing. This world is desperately in need of beauty. And so we all have to find how we can help the world be more beautiful. All right. So stay tuned. We're going to come back and review Knives Out. This is Barbara DeCosi of the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network.
We have an exciting story for you to listen to, the story of John Pridmore. John Pridmore was a hitman for the gangs in East London.
I met some guys who seemed to have everything that I thought would make you happy. So I started working for these people. So to my shame, I was involved in vicious crime of all sorts.
He collected debts for the gangs. And if people didn't pay their debts, it was his job to kill them.
And as I drove home that night, I thought, what have I become that I could kill someone and not even care?
He was in the elevator on his way up to the 17th floor, and there was a 17-year-old young man in the elevator with him. Suddenly, this young man looked John right in the eye, and he said, Jesus loves you.
And I said the first prayer I'd ever said. I said, up to now, all I've done is take from you, God. Now I want to give.
Within a year, by the grace of God, John was able to get out of the gang and be freed from this road to hell that he had been walking on. Go to Virgin Most Powerful YouTube channel and listen to this story today.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her because she has been shown great love. According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello, and welcome back to our last segment on Church of the Masses Radio. Again, my name is Barbara Nicolosi. I am a screenwriter and a producer. I am a member of the Writers Guild of America, and I am an educator. I have my doctorate in creative writing. And now I am coordinating the script and screenwriting programs in the graduate school at Regent University. I asked my friend to join me for this last segment. We're going to review Knives Out because she is one of my colleagues from the cinema school at Regent. She is an adjunct professor of cinema, Angela Andrews. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Barb. It's good to hear
Welcome.
From you.
Angela and I went to see Knives Out together, and so I thought it would be fun to bring her in, and we could review it together. So, Angela, why don't we start with you just giving the audience a quick kind of 411 of what the plot is of the movie?
I would say it's very similar to some very famous classics like Murder on the Orient Express or Death by Murder or that sort of thing. It was all the people, a family, all contained in this, you know, one location and trying to figure out like who done it. The patriarch of the family dies and they want to know who done it.
Very good. Yeah, it's a very kind of traditional formula that we all kind of tend to like, you know. It's like, okay, it's a caper film, it's a whodunit. And to me, 90% of the fascination of the movie was the location, right? There's this old mansion, and it's very stylized, to say the least, mm-hmm. in the way it's set up, right? There's, you know, all the nooks and crannies and the secret passages, but also, like, knives. there's a massive structure made of knives in the middle of, I guess, the living room or something. And you're looking at that while they're interviewing all the initial actor, characters. So, yeah. So basically what happens then is you want to spoiler alert everybody. But, yeah. So what happens?
They never did explain what that knife thing was. It must have been some form of art. But the situation is they're all fixed to inherit from the patriarch, and that is in danger for all of them now. So it has to be solved so they know that they will inherit what they think they're owed.
Okay, very good. And there's a... it's an ensemble cast, obviously. And there's the quirky detective played by Daniel Craig, who is famous for playing James Bond. But here he's using a very gruff Southern accent and, kind of a very, I don't know what exactly he's supposed to be. But anyway, he's supposed to be some assistant to the police that was called in. But you have people like Chris Evans and Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette, Christopher Plummer. So huge all-star cast of people. And so the question is, okay, who done it, right? So and there's an actress named Ana de Armas who ends up being the lead, kind of surprising to me. But I don't know if she's famous for, she's a Latina actress. I'm looking down her list of credits here. She was in Blade Runner 2049, that kind of unfortunate thing. She's done a lot of Latin work and War Dogs, Overdrive, nothing really huge. But anyway, Knives Out is like her big kind of breakthrough, but she has five films right now in post-production and one filming, just to say she's the new hot thing. I don't know why I didn't find her particularly enthralling in the piece, but anyway, she plays the lead. So, okay, so what did we think of this movie? I thought the production design, you know, was good. It's all one location for most of the movie until the midpoint, this going into the third act, really. It's all this mansion, which is fun to look at. And, yeah, it's been highly stylized. It looks kind of the place where you would imagine this crime could happen. So I give them points for production design. What did you think?
I was relieved, because sometimes in those types of films, when you're stuck in essentially one location, it's uncomfortable and you just feel stuck. In this one, I thought the setting was really interesting, and I didn't have that confined feeling. So they explored all over that whole setting, the whole mansion.
Very good. So no claustrophobia. That's a great point. Okay. And then, I guess we jump into story. And what did you think? Like, we talked about it coming out of there. What was your sense of what happened to the story here? Because people are kind of raving about this movie, you know, like people are like, oh, it was so much fun. It was a great caper film. So I kind of went in with high expectations. But yeah, what did you think?
Well, with all the stars who were in it, that in itself was entertaining and led you to believe, well, this has got to be good because all these folks are here in the film. But as it went along, there were lots of twists and just when, you know, people pleading or setting up their case. But at the end, it seemed kind of like a lot of the steam went out of it when it was sort of, you know, one twist that you thought was the ending and then the other twist. I think Under normal circumstances would have been really surprising, but it somehow it felt like it lost steam. So I don't.
Yeah, it really did. To me, it felt like they ran out of story and by the midpoint. And then you have this amazing cast and you have Daniel Craig and this Ana de Armas, the two leads, basically leave the house and go driving around and all this other stuff now happening off location. And it was like, what is this? You know, you left Jamie Lee Curtis and Toni Collette and Christopher Plummer and all these other people, these amazing actors, and you had nothing for them to do. And it was just, we're kind of in search of a story here. So I think it was one of those things, what we call second act problems. They just didn't, they had a really good idea, but then they didn't have a clever enough solution. And then they just kind of ran out of story. So they were fishing around trying to fill up about, I'm going to say, 40 minutes of movie.
Yeah, I think that the person who you end up finding is the guilty party. I don't even remember him being in the first half of the film. He just sort of appeared. Oh, I give it away. It's a he. But he appeared and I'm like, well, he's interesting. Why didn't we hear more about him throughout? And then regarding the second act droopiness, why did the part where she sent the, you know, got the lab report from her cousin, it sort of seemed extraneous, like you said, to like be on that set and to meet all these potential people who have a stake in the house by themselves. Like they could have taken anything or, you know, it was dangerous.
Yeah, to very that good. So the movie was all set up. You know, introduction, the location, everybody's kind of motives and everything. And the only person who really wasn't set up very well, as you noted, was the guy, the villain, eventually, the real, which is seems pretty unfair. But then, after the setup, then they just didn't have that much places to go. I mean, the challenge of a movie like Knives Out is you have to be smarter than the audience. You have to be much smarter than the audience, right? And I was sitting there watching the movie, and I said, this would be a really clever ending to this movie. And then their ending was much less clever than the one that I came up with in my head. And it's like, yeah, no, you can't do that. You got to be much smarter than the audience. You can't make the audience feel like they were smarter than you. Now, one other point then that we can talk about that I found very disappointing and kind of disgusting in the movie was the politically correct agenda that kept asserting itself, right? So the main character was an illegal immigrant. I guess her family is illegal, and that's being so she's being threatened with being deported.
Exposed
and deported, and her family is going to be separated. And then the family is rich, wealthy, spoiled white people. They're not sympathetic at all. They're greedy and they're kind of nasty and traitorous. And she is the one, the font of all virtue, and goodness and kindness and love and whatever. And so it just felt really heavy-handed to me, the political stuff. And I didn't know why is it even in there. I mean, what did you feel about that?
I thought it was a cheap shot. I think that though, in these kinds of films, though, like on some of the other ones, on the Orient Express, there was different people, like different from different backgrounds and different places and classes. And then here in this house, it's family. So you're sort of stuck, just with this group of people. And I don't know why they would have chosen her as the nurse, especially if she was illegal. How did she have access to drugs and, every
other? Exactly. Yeah. No, it's a great point. And it wasn't balanced, it felt very heavy handed. And why do people do that? I think that's one of the things you do when you have lost control of your story. So you're like, oh, let's really, it's supposed to be a murder caper movie, but let's really make it a political, statement piece so that we get, that it becomes important in that way. And we're being populist or whatever. But, I think it's something, if you really have a tight screenplay that's working, you don't have time for the political, virtue signaling going on. And this movie just went there too many times. And I found it unbelievable. I thought that this girl was all good and wonderful and pure, and everybody else was tainted and dark.
I watched some of the cast interviews, and she wasn't in the interview, but the other people who described her when they were asked, she seemed like, all the ones I saw said she was sort of like the darling of the film, of the cast, like when they're not on screen,
Good. You know what? We got to wrap it up here. So thumbs up or thumbs down, Angela, what do you say? Should people wait to see it on the streaming services or now?
I think it's up. I think it's up. I think it's pretty good.
Okay. All right. So basically, okay, not great, but not a total waste. All right. Angela, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you, everybody. We're done with another episode of Church of the Masses. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. Thank you for tuning in. And we will see you next week. We have a great show next week. So thank you and God bless you. Thank you.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.